Fortnight in Film is a podcast where every week you get the chance to listen in on a group of film lovers chatting about the great, or not so great, movies that we've been watching over the past fortnight. Hello and welcome to episode 11 of A Fortnight in Film. I'm your host, Jason.
I'm your co-host, Christian.
And I'm your co-host, George.
Thanks for tuning in. Back again for our monthly episode.
Yeah, it's been a while. Life has been crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I've missed you, Christian.
I miss you too, George. I called my wife George the other day and she wasn't happy about that.
Heads up. The films we're about to discuss may contain spoilers. For a list of the movies we cover this week, check out the description. So let's kick it off with Christian's topic.
South Korean cinema. I'm hardcore into it. Quick backstory. I kind of had like two things that sort of got me into film. One was that my dad is always a big movie guy. He's a big audio visual guy. Like he loves like speaker systems and stuff like that. So it was a big hobby. But I always watched movies with him when I was growing up. And so I always had kind of a fondness for movies. But, you know, I watched a lot of movies. He had a big collection. But it was a casual thing. And then in college, I met this guy. He was like my best friend in college. Sadly, he passed away a few years ago. He was a film major. And he was a really, really into Asian cinema. And so he kind of introduced me to that. And I think the first one he made me watch was Old Boy, which I don't, now that I'm like older and I have a lot of experience with South Korean cinema, I don't know if that's like the best gateway into it because it can get kind of weird. But it is one of the finest films ever made, in my opinion. It was probably the most internationally like recognized South Korean cinema film. Until you got to the more recent Parasite, where all of a sudden everyone is watching a lot of South Korean cinema. That was kind of like the big push into like the mainstream audience in America where I live.
Yeah, same in the UK.
Oh yeah, same in UK, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. And so I had seen that, and of course he had showed me a lot of others. I had watched the whole Vengeance trilogy, which I don't know if you guys are aware, but Old Boy is actually part of a trilogy of three disparate films, which are not directly related. They're just related. They all three revolve around the theme of revenge.
I've watched it. Yeah, I've watched all three.
Oh, you have? All right, fantastic. So we're on the same wavelength there. I think they're all amazing. Old Boy is the best, but I do consider the other two to be like close seconds. They are outstanding movies. It's a shame people don't talk about them as much. And then, you know, I think I really like made it officially like one of my big hobbies a year or two ago because I was listening to yourmoviesucks.org or watching it on YouTube as a YouTuber who is a film guy, film critic. I don't even know what you'd call him, but I love that guy. And I was like, you know what? I love movies. I should just, you know, make this a thing for myself. And I started doing that. But one, like the second big push for me was South Korean cinema. What do you even say about South Korean cinema? It's just different. And maybe this is me being a little cynical, but I feel like America, I feel like there was a time in our, you know, cinematic history, like you get all these great old school films like 50s and 60s. Maybe this is a little rose tinted glasses, but I feel like at the time, you know, we were really, there was like a big, you know, people wanted to make money, but there was this big push for artistic stuff. And that was kind of, you feel like, or I feel like at least that was like the main push for the cinema industry in America was art, but you know, it should also make a lot of money. And now it feels like it's all money. It's all money. And occasionally art falls out. You know, I feel like they're starting to get so much money and attention now in South Korea from overseas audiences because of films like Old Boy and Parasite. You know, maybe God forbid in like 10 years, they'll be the same way as us. It's all about money and art falls out. But right now where they're at, I feel like it's where we used to be, where art is the primary motivator. And thank goodness it's good enough that it makes money. But that's how I feel about it. They do things that I think just well in particular, like as an industry, I feel like they pull off long form movies really well. They tend to have a lot of movies that are long, but they don't like lag. They really keep your attention. They do revenge cinema really well. It's not just the Vengeance trilogy. I mean, The Man from Nowhere.
I saw the devil.
Oh my God. I Saw the Devil is so good. That's been on my top 10 list of all time for a very long time.
Yeah. Same.
It's like a Greek tragedy. Yeah. And they do that kind of stuff really well too. And you know how much I love my tragic movies. They just kind of do everything outstandingly well. Even like romance and romantic comedies over here, they're dime a dozen. They almost never, ever stand out for any reason. over here. But over there, I mean, you have like Castaway on the Moon, which I would highly recommend. They have I'm a Cyborg, but that's okay. They have this way of making a romantic comedy with this really bizarre premise. And I really feel like that's kind of a consistent theme. They take a really strange premise that I don't feel like American movies could pull off. And then they just make it work. And you're like, this is a weird movie, but this is a damn good movie. And those are the two like romantic comedies that come off the top of my head right away when I think about movies in that genre that are done well in South Korea. Is Castaway on the Moon and I'm a Cyborg, but that's okay. And if you watch those two movies, I mean, they have a lot of movies that are in that category that work really well. But if you like those two movies, I think, you know, you'd probably agree with me. They just have something special about them.
I mean, well, I'll follow on from that by saying that South Korean cinema is also sort of one of my favorite things to watch ever. I mean, my gateway was Old Boy also, because I got the Vengeance trilogy from Arrow. So I watched those three nights in a row, and then I was pretty much hooked. So then I did as much research as I could, and I got a Bong Joon-ho box set, who the director of Parasite. So then I powered my way through that. I seen Snowpiercer. It's okay, but his pure Korean films he made in Korea, because Snowpiercer is like a weird hybrid sort of thing. I just loved. Yeah, and then I got onto Park Chan-wook. He's the director of Old Boy, but he did I Saw the Devil, The Handmaiden, which I love as well. So yeah, I'm hooked now. And obviously you showed me Burning, which is also great.
Yeah, Burning is probably my favorite movie of all time still at the moment. It has yet to be dethroned.
Yeah, you're right. They just do, I don't know, it just feels different to Hollywood. Like, it just seems so much more focused. And, like, they really, some Hollywood films, you can tell they don't really care anymore about the writing or the storytelling or the characters. But with South Korean films, you can tell, like, the absolute heart is being put into making it. Like, it's not a half-assed effort. Like, they're going all in, like, with everything.
Yeah, Jason, what about you, man? Do you have any experience with South Korean cinema?
I have really nothing to offer to this discussion because I haven't. I'm probably the like closest in proximity to Asia in terms of location, but I really haven't seen a lot of Asian films. I've seen maybe like one from China. I've seen, I think, a co-production between Thailand and Cambodia. I've seen one from India. If you want to count that as part of Asia, so that's really it. I haven't I mean, the majority of my films, if you look on my Letterboxd stats thing, majority overwhelmingly American, and then it's like British, you know, Australia, some Europe, but there's a lot of South Korean films on my watch list. I just haven't got around to them yet.
This is actually, I like this though. This is actually a good idea. So Jason does not have much experience with that, and if we look at him as representing any listeners that we have that are in the same boat, I mean, where would we recommend Jason start, and subsequently, where would we recommend any listeners start if they're not familiar with it?
I'd say the most accessible is probably Parasite, purely because of how mainstream it is. Like, if you walk on the street and say, "Hey, have you seen I Saw the Devil?" or "Have you seen Memories of Murder?" the vast majority of people would probably say no. But if you mention Parasite, they may recognize it. I'm trying to think apart from Parasite, because some things like Handmaiden.
No, yeah, that's advanced. That's for the advanced course.
Memories of Murder, it's sitting at number one in my all-time Asian cinema list.
I still have yet to see that one. It's probably the top of my I need to watch list.
Yeah, no, it's about a serial killer who's sort of terrorizing this sort of part of South Korea. But it's about the sort of chase to get him. But it's not like an all-out thriller. Again, it's a very like slow burn one,
which they do so well.
They do so well.
I don't know. And across multiple directors, they do it well. I don't feel like it's just Bong Joon-ho and Choi Min-sik. I mean, I don't know. There's like a cinema culture over there, which is just very refined. It's my understanding, and I don't know the details of this, but it's my understanding that the government played a part in popularizing South Korean cinema. Like, they got some kind of, I need to look this up, so I'm prepared to be wrong about everything I'm saying, but I remember hearing about this a while back where the South Korean government kind of wanted them to have like a robust cinema kind of culture over there. And so they actually, they gave some kind of like subsidies or tax breaks or something to kind of encourage this kind of Korean new wave to happen. And then it did. And that, and it's just doing so much, it's doing wonders for the country, you know, their image across the world and everything, that they just keep it going and they encourage it.
To be fair, you're talking about like things to introduce, but it doesn't have to be films, because obviously Netflix with Squid Game, it's kind of waking people up to how good South Korean media is. So I'm hoping that'll like turn more people onto the film side of things. Because obviously Parasite and Squid Game, yes, they're super, super mainstream. But hopefully people start to look at more, you know, some of the more obscure ones.
Yeah, that'd be great, because even though the obscure ones, just they're amazing. They really have a lot of weak movies. I didn't like The Host as much when it first came out, because the CGI didn't age well. Even right away, it didn't age well, and that kind of turned me off to it. I did rewatch it though, and I'm like, you know, I mean, this, it's another thing that South Korean cinema does well is class divide and how it's expressed. They're really good at tackling that issue for some reason. They have a particular talent for it.
Wasn't The Host seemed to be about sort of American influence in South Korea, from what I could tell. He does like an American doctor. He like tells the Korean doctor to put the chemicals down the sink, which goes into the river and then creates the monster.
Sorry, South Korea, for my people.
Sorry, yeah.
We're famously disruptive. I totally agree with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, English people are innocent, okay? It's just the Americans. It's just the
Americans. The best thing that ever happened to England was us becoming the new bad guys.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
It's like when Hitler came around and everyone forgot about Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yeah. spot on.
But we digress. I agree, though. Parasite might be the best segue in, just because it had such immediate recognition and staying power, and it was the gateway drug, if you will, for a lot of people.
What we don't want to happen is for Jason to watch it and give it like 3 stars.
Oh God,
that's true. then we know that South Korean cinema maybe isn't for Jason.
Is it still the best rated film on Letterboxd?
Yeah, and it's the most viewed, I think, ever. One of the most viewed. You know, but it's interesting how Parasite did that, when there have been other films as good as Parasite. Like Memories of Murder, I know we're keeping going about Memories of Murder, but like for me it's better than Parasite. I think it's a great film that could connect with the wider audience, but like even along with Parasite, so I don't know why.
Yeah, because it's strange in a sense, right? Because I haven't obviously seen Parasite, but Parasite, I presume, is subtitled, not dubbed.
It's subtitled, yeah.
So all these you can watch dubbed, and I recommend you don't.
It's horrifying. It's horrifying.
Yeah. Squid Games was the best example of why not to watch it dubbed. It's just, get comfortable with subtitles. It will help your experience with foreign films. When people tell me they don't watch foreign films because they don't like subtitles, I cannot get behind that decision. I don't respect it. You can fucking read, can't you? You'll get used to it. Just do it.
Yeah. People say, oh, I'm too lazy. Read. Use your eyes and look at the screen and read the words on the screen. It's not difficult.
And if you can't do that, if you need to have your hand held like a baby and you need to hear some white guy like talk over foreign actors, you're getting a lesser experience every single time. No foreign film that I'm aware of did a better job with dubbing than they did with the native speakers.
For sure. Because voice is a big aspect of acting.
Oh, yeah. And it never matches up. But, you know, some like animated features do really well with dubbing in foreign language, like multiple languages.
Well, that's anime. They use a lot of dubbing in anime, don't they?
Yeah. Anime, it can be done very well in anime. For example, the show Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, I thought their dubbing was fantastic in that. It was high quality. I prefer it over the native speaker. Other than those like occasional anime films and shows, you have to watch it with the native tongue.
Yeah, that's what's surprising is like Parasite is obviously subtitled for English audiences, English speaking audiences, just like, you know, Memories of Murder is, or just like all these other films are. So it's interesting, like you said, that Parasite was the one that sort of broke out and became this big thing, when it's at its core, it's not all that different, right? It's still a South Korean film, it's still subtitled. I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to the plot of the characters or anything like that, but it's...
I think it was all the awards buzz as well, all the Oscar... I know you're not a fan of the Oscars, Christian, but the Oscar buzz helped it, I think. Like, the fact it won Best Picture, Best Director...
Yeah, I'm not a fan, but I do like that it helped it, yes. Yeah, it put it in the minds of the normies who watch the Oscars. I'm going to get flamed for that. But, yeah, no, I agree with your point, though. There were so many South Korean films that came up before Parasite that were just as or nearly outstanding as Parasite, and it didn't catch off with those. I still haven't really figured out what made this one stand out all of the sudden, because it's not the first great South Korean movie by a mile.
Have you seen Train to Busan?
Oh, of course. I've seen it like three times. That's one of my favorite zombie movies of all time.
Yeah, that I think is a bit more mainstream, but still, like, not as other zombie Hollywood movies, you know? So,
yeah, that Netflix really helped Train to Busan.
That's true, that's true. Yeah.
Train to Busan, the sequel to Train to Busan, have you seen that?
No, I need to.
That's a garbage fire.
Oh, okay, or maybe I don't need to.
It's so fucking bad. It was insulting how bad it was. I don't know what happened there. It's one of the few South Korean movies I've seen where I'm like, fuck this movie. I do have a recommendation for you, actually. Have you ever seen the American movie Taken with Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
So South Korea did a better version of that, and it's called The Man from Nowhere. I actually don't know which one was first. Man from Nowhere was 2010 and Taken...
2008, I think.
Yeah, so it did come after. So yeah, okay, Taken did it first, but Man from Nowhere did it better, in my opinion. Because they're really good at subverting your expectations, and that's what I would say the next one does really well, is A Bittersweet Life. That's a great film. I got to the end. It was a great film until I got to the end, and I was like, nope, it's a masterpiece.
You, as we're training recommendations, well, both of you should watch The Wailing.
I think I may have seen that.
I think you'd remember. It's pretty, like, some scenes are pretty hardcore. It's like a psychological horror. Disclaimer, for anyone who wants to watch Handmaiden from Park Chan-wook, don't watch it with your parents in the room, because there are some very graphic sex scenes.
Oh my god, no, don't watch that movie with your parents.
Because it just slipped out. I said, I think the day after I watched it, I said to my mum, oh, like, we should watch The Handmaiden sometime, because I really enjoyed it. And then I thought, maybe not.
They need to put that, like, on the front cover. Don't watch this with your parents. And that's one of the things that bothers me, too, and this is going to be my hot take. Because when people rip on The Handmaiden, they do so for the male gaze, you know? Because that's a thing in that movie. But then they say that the whole movie is trash because of that, and it's not, and that is a thing, definitely, and it's really present in that, but the movie still is great.
Yeah, but they basically say that the sex scenes in it were filmed purely for, like, the enjoyment of guys who want to watch lesbian sex or whatever, but, like, it pushes forward the plot. Like, it's not just there for the sake of it. Like, yes, it's graphic, but, like, it's to show the connection that the two characters are having. Like, it's not just a pointless porno sex scene thrown in there just for the sake of it. So I don't quite agree with the take that Park Chan-wook just filmed it because he wanted to film a lesbian sex scene.
Yeah, but if you read, there are some toxic reviews for that movie where people...
Yeah, I know.
People make a lot of assumptions about the director, like, personally, about men in general. It's, oh my God, it's a movie. I agree that it's very present in that film, but we can't... The whole movie isn't a horrible movie because of that one thing.
I mean, it's a classic film. I love it.
It's fantastic. I have it. I have a really great edition that has, like, the director's cut and then the theatrical.
Yeah, same. It's like,
yeah, it's like two.
It's like the gold. It's like the
gold.
I've got it. Yeah,
oh, it's a great, yeah, it's a great release.
Jason, put it on your list. Put it on your list.
Yeah, and don't watch it with your parents, buddy. they also do some good war movies, and actually, the only one I can think of off the top of my head, I know I've seen more, but my favorite to recommend is, I'm going to mispronounce this, I'm sure, but it's called Taiguki, I think. It's in English, it's The Brotherhood of War. I highly recommend that, but that one made me cry. Full on 6'4" man crying.
Is it World War II? Like, what?
No, it's Korean War.
Oh, Korean. Okay, yeah, duh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
they do have some good like World War II films, though.
Yeah, yeah.
People forget they were in it.
That's true. Yeah.
And in a sense, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot of films that they do to put out that, you know, show South Korea under Japanese occupation.
I was gonna say, like, I want to widen my sort of viewing of it, because I think I'm still kind of mainstream in the sense that most of the ones I'm watching are still pretty popular for people who like South Korean cinema. So I'm sure there are more that are sort of a bit lesser known that I can watch.
Yeah, what you can do too is pick some of the bigger directors. My wife and I recently did this with Kim Ji-won. Pick those like directors and just watch everything they put out. Because Kim Ji-won in particular, for example, his first two movies, I've never heard anyone ever mention them or talk about them, and they're outstanding. It's the Quiet Family is, I think, his first film. I actually recently found out that a Japanese director did a Japanese version of that movie, a reimagining as a dark comedy musical. It looks hilarious. I really want to see it. But yeah, he did The Quiet Family. That was his first film. And it's essentially a movie about a fan. And kind of spoilers here for anyone listening. I'm going to try not to spoil it too hard, but this is the basic premise. It's a family, like a city-going family that finally lives their dream of buying... It's basically a bed and breakfast out in the mountains for like hikers and nature people. And it's pretty secluded. And their guests keep dying.
Yeah, it's this one.
Yeah, that's the Japanese version. It's a reimagining of Kim Ji-won's first film.
Happiness of the Katakuris.
Oh, you have the Blu-ray. It's fantastic. I've been thinking about picking it up. Well, you got
to
tell me what you think.
Yeah, so I need to watch.
What a small world. But he, for anyone listening, he on a webcam, he goes, oh, he had it right next to him. He goes, this movie. But their guests die in ways that are not their fault, but they don't want it to hurt their business, so they keep trying to cover up the deaths, and it leads to dark comedy hijinks, and it's hilarious. It's a really funny film. And then his second movie was called The Foul King, about this like loser office worker with like a bank job or something. Like he's just kind of like he's a very like lifeless, bland person, but he gets this obsession with pro wrestling, and he wants to be a pro wrestler, and he just sort of makes this comical transition. And it's actually quite like a charming movie, but it's very funny. Choi Min-sik is another fantastic one to start with. He had some really great early stuff, some kind of experimental stuff. I wish I remember the name of the movies, because I watched all his stuff years ago. He's obviously come out with more since then, so I haven't seen everything he's done. But he's come out with some great stuff. The last thing I want to say about South Korean cinema, and then I'll see if you guys have anything that you still want to add, but what I don't like is when a South Korean director does an American movie. Almost every time I see it, it's bad. Snowpiercer, I'm on the fence about. Hated it when it came out. Watched it again. Liked it more. I feel like I might like it even more on a third rewatch, but it's still... I don't know. I mean, Kim Ji-won did one with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Did you know this?
Oh, The Last Stand?
The Last Stand? Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, this was Arnie's like first big comeback to film after being governor of California. And I love Schwarzenegger, and I love Kim Ji-won, but it's just when they branch out and do an American movie, first of all, I don't know why they do this. I hope I'm wrong, but the impression I get is like they feel like they have to like play with the big boys, you know, like to get into the higher league that is like the Hollywood. And if that's what it is, if there's some kind of like push for them to do that, which I don't know that that's the case, but it would depress me if it turned out to be the case. Because they don't need to do that. I think they're better than us. I think that they lower themselves when they direct an American movie, and it doesn't work. I watched the special features, and he had to have an interpreter on set at all times because he didn't speak English. That's just a recipe for disaster. I thought that movie was terrible. And then, you know, you can't direct a movie when there's a language barrier like that. And one of my favorite examples to give is there's this movie from the 80s called Nightmare Weekend, which is a god awful horror movie. It's terrible. And it was like a joint French American production, I think. And literally the entire support cast, like all the camera operators, the director of photography, like they all spoke nothing but French. And then everyone else spoke English, and they like didn't fucking understand each other the whole time. And the movie is terrible. It's the same thing. I'm watching the special features and he's speaking through an interpreter. I'm like, he directed the whole movie like that? Why did he do that? Why did he need to do that? His movies are so great.
Was it Park Chan-wook? So one of them did like a TV series in the UK, The Little Drummer Girl. Was it directed by him? Yes, it was directed by him. And it did well. It did well. It aired on the BBC. So I think it can work. But again, he hasn't done anything since then in here or the States. So just like a one-off thing. But yeah, you're right. I think they're sort of discrediting themselves a bit by trying to break into Hollywood when they're making great stuff, you know, in South Korea.
Yeah, I'm worried that like they think that, or until Parasite, they thought that was the way to break into this market. It never worked because the movies aren't good enough for people to pay attention. They just don't work. I'm glad Parasite did that for them. Hopefully we won't, have them trying to cross markets in that way. Because I don't think it works. Snowpiercer was maybe an exception. I'm still on the fence about that one.
I was going to say to Jason that your homework before our next group meeting is to watch at least one film from South Korea. So that's your homework. Yeah.
I do actually think The Man from Nowhere is really accessible. It's an action movie, but it's also very emotional. I don't know how easy that one's going to be to find, but that might be a good one too.
I stay away from Old Boy or I Saw the Devil just yet.
I Saw the Devil might be a good first segue into it too, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's very violent. Like, it's very full on.
It is extremely violent, but it's kind of more traditional, like a traditional narrative that...
Yeah, if you like revenge, just classic revenge films, then
yeah, because Old Boy is like eccentric, I think is the best way to put it. It's eccentric.
It's like very twisty and turny.
It's very twisty. The rationales, again, it's very eccentric. I can't think of a better word.
It's a messed up. Yep. Like, it is messed up, but in a good way. But yeah,
right,
it's,
but yeah, you need to kind of work yourself up to that. But yeah, that's your homework, man, and we want to hear about it on the next podcast.
We do.
So let's move on to our next topic, which is George's pick. Bit of a change in pace from a leisurely talk about South Korean cinema.
So it's films that traumatized us as kids, which I'm sure there are a lot. I'm sure the list is endless for us because I know we've talked about it a bit. But yeah, so who wants to kick it off? Jason, do you want to give a couple?
Yeah, well, I might go because I seem to have the least traumatizing childhood out of the three of us in terms of films.
Really?
you're normal.
I was watching, Disney films and family-friendly films, and you two were exposed to all sorts of horrors as youths. So this was sort of a hard thing. I've got a few. The first one, which I've always remembered, I probably haven't actually seen this film since I saw it as a kid, but I've always remembered this scene. Was The Lion King when Scar pushes Mufasa off a cliff and he gets stampeded by the whatever they are, buffaloes or...
That fucked me up when I was a kid.
Yeah, I cried. I used to cry at that. Like the stampede scene with the wildebeest just coming over the crest and then down. That is scary for a kid. So, yeah.
Like, yeah, that was always just a very scary, even though, like, you knew it was coming, because I'm sure we all rewatched The Lion King more than once, like, it still was like, yeah, that would be my, probably the earliest, traumatizing film memory. Sort of like you mentioned when we chatted about The Wizard of Oz, George, I'm sure The Witch, when I watched it when I was younger, was a scary character.
Surely the flying monkeys as well.
They were a bit, unnerving.
Yeah. Christian, have you seen The Wizard of Oz?
Absolutely. No, it's that's one of the classics my dad made me watch when I was a kid. I've seen it a bunch of times. Yeah, it's it holds up well today, I think.
I'm sure there were some scenes I'm not a big Harry Potter fan now. I'm not particularly interested in rewatching them, but I liked Harry Potter when I was younger, as I'm sure a lot of people did. I'm sure there were some scenes in Harry Potter, but...
The basilisk in Chamber of Secrets used to scare me.
The Chamber of Secrets used to scare me.
The Dementors, yeah, there's plenty.
But yeah, that's really it for me.
You had a blissful childhood.
Yeah, that's nothing. I can't wait to tell you how movies fucked me up when I was a kid. Hey, George, you want to go first, buddy?
Okay, yeah, I'll go. Okay, so, I mean, the number one for me is the never-ending story. I think it's at the start. There's like a massive like wolf creature that like jumps out this cave, and it absolutely freaked the shit out of me. And then, well, the whole film kind of scared me a bit. But there's a scene where, oh, what's the horse called? Is it Atreya?
Atreyu, I think it was, yeah.
So basically, the main character, who's this boy, his horse, they go into a swamp, and the horse is stuck in some sort of quick-sinking mud, and he slowly, the horse sort of slowly drowns as you see the boy kind of trying to get him out, and it made me cry when I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah, Jason, have you seen that movie or that scene?
I haven't. I know of it. The only thing I know about the Neverending Story was when they sung the song in Stranger Things. I don't know if you've seen Stranger Things. I love Stranger Things. So like that's the only thing I know of the Neverending Story is that song. So
well, it is a banger though. Yeah, that's a great song. But you need to just go YouTube that moment, honestly. And picture watching it as a kid.
I can't watch it.
Yeah, as an adult it's hard to watch. It was a real horse, and they showed him drowning to death in mud like he's at Passchendaele, and this tearful character is trying to say, like, don't give up. No, you have to live. He's trying to, like, pull him out by the reins, and this horse is just drowning in mud.
What makes it worse is the scene is actually really well-crafted. Like, it's such a well-crafted scene. That's why it's so traumatizing, because you see the horse kind of standing there still, and you're like, why is the horse standing there? And then it just slowly sinks. And the boy realizes,
the horse doesn't try, like it deliberately wanted to die, like it was a suicide.
In the comments, because I did try and watch it the other day, in the comments people were saying it's actually kind of a mirror to, like, people were saying their friends who had died from suicide and depression, it reminded them of them. Like, it's pretty deep, because it's like a symbol for you when you're stuck in, you know, in a rut.
I have had a close friend kill herself years ago. And now it's okay. I mean, it's that, sorry, not to make it about me, but like, now that you say that, I'm like, oh God, you're right. It really is. It hits hard on that level. It really does. And it's a kid's movie.
It's a kid's movie. Yeah. So
the kid's movie,
all these poor adults in the comments saying about, you know, their friends and all these themes. I was like, oh my days. It's literally a kid's film.
That is the power of a film that has staying power past childhood, though, because there are other films that do that well. And I'm overdue for a Neverending Story rewatch. I actually did rewatch it a few years ago. But I remember it holds up as an adult. It really does. And that's just one example. I mean, the movie is it's great.
So that's my number one. my number two is The Shining, which I watched when I was 8 or 9, which was a very, very poor choice.
Yeah, you're not supposed to see that one until you're like 25.
Multiple scenes, horrifying. I won't go into it, but yeah. Predator, the scene of the skinned body dangling in the tree, gave me nightmares for days.
Yeah, I can see that. That's pretty rough.
I know, Jason, you don't like this film. Independence Day?
Hated it. Half-star trash.
Not so.
Boy, you're going to love the sequel then.
Yeah, maybe the film anyway is so bad. Actually, well, no, I think I liked it at the time, but I watched it when I was like 10 or 11, and I think it was the design of the aliens, because there is this scene where you see some of the alien, right? Like, you see kind of its shape and stuff. But I went to bed, and I was like picturing all the clothes in my room. I was like picturing it as the alien. Like, you know when you're sleeping and you see something in the corner of your room and you like think it's something? I was terrified. I was like, oh my God, it's like the alien from Independence Day. And it terrified me.
Yeah, your brain fills in the spaces because you can't see it very well. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple of honorable mentions. Bambi, when the mother deer dies. That's a classic one.
I've actually heard that scene turned, like, a few famous people who are vegetarians say that scene did it. I don't know of anyone in particular. I just remember reading like an article or something where a couple of famous like actors or something, they're like, I'm a vegetarian. I have been since I saw Bambi.
The Exorcist, the head spinning, and the spider run scene. Yeah, so I'll leave it there. I managed to basically watch a lot of horrors when I was younger. I managed to sort of sneak it past my parents.
Oh, actually, I have one. I have another one I just thought of when you said horror. So I watched, when I was 12, I believe, I watched the original Amityville Horror, not the like 2005 remake or whatever, like the 1970s Amityville Horror. And I don't remember being particularly scared by the film. I mean, I'm sure it was scary because it's not, it is a horror film. But I've always remembered, so I watched that film and everything in the film happens at 3:15 a.m. And so I went to bed that night and I woke up at 3:15 a.m., which spooked me out already. I was like, oh my God, I'm awake at 3:15. And then what happened is our house, because I guess it was an old house, made this like awful creaking noise right at that moment. And I was like, that's it, I'm going to die, I'm dead.
speaking of omens, this is quite off topic, but I was kind of shopping for some stuff today. And when I was paying, the total came to six six six. Me and the cashier like stared at each other like, "Oh my god, is that like an omen?"
Like, I a little off topic too, but I do that sometimes when I take people's blood pressure. If that makes any sense? Because I have a lot of my patients are, you know, older. They tend to be very religious, and so sometimes like I'm not lying about the blood pressure, but every time I say like, "Oh, it's 126/66," I always like look at them. Just hoping they'll go, oh, the mark of the beast. Like,
yeah.
Never happens, but I can dream. So I have a list I'm working on, but I there are more movies than this that I can think of that are not on the list yet, because I only add things to my Letterboxd lists when I like have them, like when I own them, and then watch them and now review them. Like I'll put it on the list. But two, before I get to my list, Chucky, Child's Play. That messed me up when I was a kid. And I had a babysitter who thought it was fun to fuck with us. And so they would put it on and they would like, I'll put it on repeat.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it was pretty horrible. And I still get the heebie-jeebies like as an adult. And it's not because they're scary. It's just because I don't know, because that fucked with me when I was a kid. I still had that kind of lingering like, ugh. Something about it. It still kind of gets under my skin a little bit. I keep telling myself I'm going to like face my fears and watch all the Chucky movies, but I still don't, because I know that they're also just not good movies. But stuff from the list. So I'll preface this by saying that my dad, well-meaning fellow, but he had a habit of like, because we had a video rental store down the road from our house, and he was always renting movies. He's a big movie guy. And so sometimes when he needed to get a babysitter, he would rent movies for us. To make the babysitter's job a little easier. And anything that was animated, he thought was a children's cartoon. So I remember one time when I must have been 8, maybe 9 years old, he rented Wizards from 1977, I think it is. It's not a kid's movie. It's not a kid's movie. It's got naked fairies and blood and gore and Nazis. It has Nazi orcs fighting fairies with bow and arrows. It's a Ralph Bakshi film. If you have any familiarity with him, you'll kind of know where I'm coming from. But he, yeah, the babysitter was a little spacey and recognized that this was clearly not a children's movie, but also didn't turn it off. And so I have this very, very solid memory of my dad coming home. And the babysitter was like, yeah, that wasn't a kid's movie. It had nudity and gore, a lot of Nazi symbols and swastikas. And my dad's like, oh, really? No. Oh, did you turn it off? And she goes, no. And he goes, oh, well. He's kind of this like, ah, I guess that's going to fuck him up then. Like, and then he actually did this again with Akira. I saw Akira when I was, because it came out the year before I was born. And I saw that when I was maybe 10-ish. And so it didn't really super fuck me up, but it kind of fucked me up. So there is an almost rape scene in the movie where a rape is about to happen. It starts to get graphic and then the rape is interrupted. But it's pretty graphic. It almost goes there, you know. And that's still kind of hard to watch as an adult. Although I as an adult, I'm like, oh, it ends really quickly though. Like I remember it dragging on more, you know. When I first like started watching that movie again, I was like, I remember that being a little actually more graphic. So I guess I kind of hammed it up a bit in my mind. But that, and it's just a very disturbing film. Some of the stuff that happens towards the end is just very. I don't know, not Lovecraftian, but very, just disturbing, just very, very disturbing. Let's just leave it there. Oh, and the scene in the playroom, ooh, with the milk and the glass. No, man. Ugh. No. God, one of the best movies ever made though. There's another one called The Pit from 1981. So this is a film, I'm going to try not to spoil it too hard, but it's apparently a classic horror movie, but I've never heard anyone talk about it ever. But I saw this when I was, I was young. My parents weren't divorced yet. And this is like one of my earlier memories. I must have been like 6 or 7 years old when I saw this movie. And it's disturbing as an adult because the guy who the child actor is the creepiest little fucker that's ever been born. And I actually saw him as an adult and he looks like a super nice, chill guy. I don't know. But he just was creepy as shit in this movie. But it's basically about this kid who's like a total sociopath. He gets obsessed with his babysitter. And he's evil. He has a teddy bear that talks to him and tells him to do stuff. And he finds a pit in the woods that has monsters in it. And they're really fucked up looking like ape creatures with glowing red eyes. And they eat people. But they can't get out. So he's the only one who knows this pit is. And so anyone he doesn't like, he will just throw into the pit. And the monsters will eat them. And it does. If it doesn't sound that disturbing, he throws a little old lady in there and then takes a joyride in her automatic wheelchair back to his house. And when I was a kid, that fucked me up. That he threw a little old lady into a pit of death.
Yeah, I feel that's quite funny now.
It is. So it is kind of funny because I bought this movie now because it's part of my project where like one of my little side projects within film is I'll try and remember these movies. I only remembered like one or two scenes from that movie, but always stuck with me. And then I'll go on Reddit, like on the tip of my tongue subreddit. And I'll be like, okay, what, this is all I remember about the movie. And then they'll be like, oh, I think you're talking about this movie. And then I'll buy it and then rewatch it and re-experience it as an adult. And that was one of the big ones. Cause that was a very firm memory I couldn't get out of my head. And it's actually really like cathartic, fun thing to do. One of the other movies I did that for that also kind of scarred me as a kid was called Robot Jocks from 1989, directed by Stuart Gordon. It is not like a good film. It's super low budget. This is the guy who did like
Reanimator,
Fortress, and Reanimator. Yeah. So it's rough around the edges, definitely. But there's this scene where some of the pilots do like a training exercise where they have to climb up this obstacle course that's like 3 stories high or something. And they have to crawl into a hole in the ceiling to win. And it's competitive. And the whole time the thing is shaking. Some of the parts are electrified. There's like a strobe light going off. I think they play loud music to be like as disorienting as possible. And they fight in the obstacle course. And then the characters will knock each other off. And it's presumed that they die. And something about that just callousness of human life, like even though it's like as an adult I rewatched it and it's just a total B movie, that scene was just kind of disturbing to me. Mulholland Drive, I watched that when I think I was like 12 when it first came out, and that was too early. I now own it. I did a project where I watched everything David Lynch put out, all of Twin Peaks, all of his movies, his short films, everything. And so now I appreciate it for being the Lynchian film that it is.
I was just going to say, that confused the hell out of me when I watched it 2 months ago. So I can't imagine watching it as a child.
Since I watched it, I told everyone that the movie didn't make any sense. It confused the hell out of me. I obviously feel differently now that I have watched it like twice as an adult and like really put thought into it and tried to analyze it. And you got to look up some YouTube analysis videos. And now I feel like I get it as much as I can get it. But at the time, this confused the shit out of me. And I actually remember this time where I went later to college and I had this buddy of mine who was also not the same film major friend of mine who died, but a different one who was also my roommate. And they were friends, actually. That's how I met my film buddy who died. And he was like he can be kind of snarky. And I told him that there was this movie that like made no sense. And he's like, you're an idiot. Like, you know, they always have a point, like movies, like you just probably didn't get it. Didn't get what they were going for. I'm like, okay, watch it. Yeah, so I told him, it's like, it's Mulholland Drive. Go ahead and watch. He's like, I will. You know, he was like, so shitty about it. And I remember coming home from class one day to the dorm, and I went in there, and he was halfway through it. I'm like, what are you watching? He goes, that movie you told me about, Mulholland Drive. I'm like, oh, yeah? How do you think? He like, puts the headphone down, turns on. He goes, I don't know what the fuck is going on in this movie. I felt so vindicated. The scene with the body, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah,
yeah. That was pretty. That was pretty rough to see when I was 12. Sure. Pinocchio. This is probably my favorite one to talk about that scarred me. Pinocchio. That scene where, because I rewatched it as an adult and I'd totally forgotten about this, and then as soon as I remembered, I remembered it as a trauma, and I think it was like so traumatizing that I just buried it.
Wait, hold up. I think you may traumatize me now, because that is fine. Because like, I've seen Pinocchio when I was younger, but I can't remember it. So you may traumatize me now.
The donkeys? Yeah. So if you remember, the Pinocchio...
Maybe I pushed it so far into my psyche. I just can't.
Yeah, that's what I did. That's what I did. So okay. So in the movie, essentially, he goes to, I forget what it's called. It's like the land of pleasure or something. It's got like a really suggestive name. I forget what it's called exactly, but it's like the land of like happiness or whatever they call it. And it's basically where all the bad boys, in air quotes, go. And they drink, they smoke cigars. There's no parental figures. They're just like roving around in gangs. They just smash shit all day. And they get to be bad boys. You know, it's like an island of bad boys. We get to do whatever you want. And it sounds like a paradise. And obviously the implication that the movie is going for is that Pinocchio, who is a good boy, and he's being tempted by all these bad boy activities to be a bad boy. And wouldn't you hate to be one of them? Look how awful they are. And then you find out later that there's something like in the drink or in the food or whatever, and they all start turning into donkeys. And like they turn into donkeys and they can't speak anymore. And then they put them to work in coal mines until they die.
I'm watching it right now, and it is horrifying.
It's a horror show.
The boy has just turned into a donkey, and it's horrifying.
Yeah, and they cry and are upset. They have this like existential meltdown of like, oh my god, what's happening to me? And then they put the donkey, they can't talk anymore. They turn into like actual donkeys, and then the like evil person who runs the theme park or whatever you call it puts them to work at like pulling, you know, buckets of coal and stuff, and like, you know, just exploits them for labor and stuff, and presumably until they drop dead of exhaustion. And then he leaves, like he gets, you know, Pinocchio finally gets back to Geppetto at the end of the movie. And I'm thinking, as an adult rewatching this, I was thinking back on the donkey scene. I'm like, shouldn't somebody call the police? Call the police! he's kidnapping children and turning them into donkeys against their will and putting them to work in like slavery conditions. Someone call the police! This is fucked up. So I had forgotten about that. I rewatched as an adult, and I turn to my wife. I'm like, this is fucked up, right? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, or this is, oh my God. There's one more. This is the most, of the films that both traumatized me and that I had one scene in my head and that I would go and revisit it, like, and try and find out what it was and then buy it. This is the most obscure one that I found so far. This one I had tried Googling for years before I finally went on Reddit and someone knew what I was talking about. Super obscure. It's from 1998, directed by Peter Werner. It's called Tempting Fate. It's basically a direct-to-TV movie. The scene that I remember that really messed me up, that I couldn't forget, is a family sitting down watching TV, and they're reading out like a lottery on TV. And then on the TV, they call out a name, and it's like the father that's watching TV, and his whole family's like, run. And then he runs out, and then like the entire citizenry chases him down with baseball bats and beats him to death in the street. Basic premise is it's a great concept, but it's a really rough B movie. Is this guy is a scientist. He finds a way to go into an alternate timeline where it's like the same people and it's very similar, but the world is different. And so his like two friends, he uses them as test subjects, and they go to this other world. And again, it's like a mirror image where things are different, but it's like cleaner. Everyone's nicer. And what they come to find out, they want to like live in this alternate reality because it's better. And what they find out is that they have this weird justice system where there's like no crime, because every once in a while they do this like TV lottery. I think it's like every 3 months. They also like lobotomize people basically, but it's spoilers. Sorry. I should say spoilers first. No one's going to watch this movie, whatever. But they do this lottery where they randomly select citizenry, and then they have to try and escape, and everyone else chases them down and beats them to death in the streets like a dog. That somehow solved crime. I was kind of interested to see like where they could have gone with that to make that make sense, but they didn't really explore it. But that's what it was. And it's basically a precursor to The Purge. But they never get called out on it, and that's why, because no one ever saw this fucking movie, except me, and I remembered it, and that one scene was very traumatic. Anyway, we have a third topic, which I don't think this one will be as long. I don't have as much to contribute to this one.
So, this is my pick. So, it came off the back of however many episodes ago we discussed Goodfellas, and that is best gangster films ever. So, I'm a bit of a lover of gangster films, crime films. So I've got a bit of a list. I've probably got my top five, and then there's a few others that I would just mention.
I'm just going to warn you, there's one gangster movie that I really go against the grain on. And if it's in your top five, I'm going to be super triggered.
The top five in order. So number one is, of course, cliche, but The Godfather. Godfather is number one. Number two is Godfather Part Two. I do think The Godfather's, I know a lot of people like go back and forth on which one's better. I think The Godfather. First one is 5 stars. Part two is 4.5. You probably could give it 5 stars, but there's a few nitpicky things I don't like about it.
I never want to like The Godfather as much as I do because it's such a, because the fans kind of ruin it for me. Yeah. And I want to be like edgy and against the, you know, swimming upstream on this one, but I watch it. I'm like, I'm begrudgingly like, nah, it is a classic. It's a classic.
I was the same. I watch it and I was like, I can probably find reasons to give it less, but I'm like, it's a Godfather. I'll give it 5 stars. Like, you know, generally I don't fall into that trap. Like you guys know that I'm very much rate things what I want, which doesn't often match popular opinion. But that one I was like, you know what? I'll give it 5 stars. So that's number one, number two, number three. I'm curious as to which one is gonna trigger you, Christian. If it's in here, I have a feeling this might be it. I hope it isn't. Number three is Scarface.
No, it's not
okay,
it.
Good. I love Scarface so
much. That's a great film.
I have it at 5 stars. I could probably put it like if I'm going off pure enjoyment, Scarface would be number one. I love Scarface. It's probably my second favorite film ever behind Training Day. Like, I love Scarface so much.
It's not a landmine unless you have a Scarface poster in your room. Then it's a landmine. Then I'm triggered.
Enjoyment-wise, Scarface would probably be number one, because I do like it more than The Godfather, but I do think The Godfather is a better film than Scarface. Number four, which I actually rewatched a couple of nights ago, is Casino. I bumped it down. I had it at 4.5. I bumped it down to 4. I still think it's a great film. It's still one of my favorite films, but there are a few issues. Like, it's a very long film. It's Scorsese, of course, so it's very long. You know, it's narrated like the whole way through, which you guys know I hate. And yeah, just but it still is a great film. I love it. It's fantastic. And then number five is another Scorsese film, Goodfellas. So those are my top five. There's an honorable mention I'd throw in there. Another Scorsese film, of course, the King of Gangster Movies, The Departed.
That was going to be one of my picks. It's a great movie.
I love The Departed, but I do think the other films the better, maybe, but I do have a Departed as a 5-star film as well, so I love that. So then there's 4 films that I haven't seen, but I'd throw in there because I've heard they're so highly acclaimed. But obviously, I mean, I like them, of course, but I'd throw them in there. So one is The Irishman, one is Gangs of New York, which I believe was also Scorsese, I think. Once Upon a Time in America. I know that's not really a gang movie such, but I guess it involves it a bit. And then another one that's sort of out of left field, but I've heard it's very good, so I'll throw it in there, is Menace to Society, which I was going to watch on Netflix, but I ran out of time, and I think it's now been taken off.
You're still not walking on my landmine. I'm kind of surprised, George. Now I want to hear what you say. So see if you. I want to see if you step on the mine. I want to see if you step on the mine, and then I'll tell you.
Well, I don't have a ranked. I don't really have a ranked list because I like those types of films, but they're not my sort of top favorites. So obviously I'm going to go with Godfather Parts 1 and 2. Of course, you know I love them. I think they're great.
Anybody who has Godfather Part 3 in your list, you're wrong and you don't know anything about film.
Just yeah, saying. No. Goodfellas, of course. You know how much I love Goodfellas. We discussed it. The Irishman, I watched a couple of years ago. It was great to see Pesky, De Niro, and Pacino sort of reunite. It was great. I think they de-aged Robert De Niro, which looks a bit dodgy sometimes. But yeah, that was good. The Town, with Ben Affleck. It's less of a gangster, more like a crime drama, but it's very good. Heat, which again is more of a crime heist film, but I loved that. I loved that. Five stars, easy. I've got some foreign ones as well. City of God.
Oh, that's on my list.
I have been wanting to watch that movie for so long.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
It's one of my... I studied it in college. It's one of my... It's probably in my top 10 films of all time. It's brilliant. So of course, yeah, that is a gangster film because it's about, you know, this young photographer's life growing up in Rio. La Haine, which is a French film.
Yes, that's also on my list. All I see on Letterboxd is people giving that like 5 stars, like people love it.
Oh yeah, that's also on my list. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, about gang life in a French suburb.
There you go. And still no landmines. Still no landmines. Now I'm curious what it is.
Well, I do want to find out what it is. Yeah. What is it?
It's The Untouchables. Fuck that movie.
I didn't love it. I liked it, I think. Why did you hate it?
It's insufferably melodramatic.
I swear we've talked about this before. We have. Yeah, we have.
Yeah. It was eye-rollingly awful. And then not only that, but I watched it. I was like, I don't know a lot because I'm a history nerd. You guys know that. I knew a little bit about that story. And the very little that I remembered, I was like, I don't think it happened like this. So I Googled it afterwards and read a couple articles. And they basically, there's like what really happened. And then they changed almost every single aspect for a movie. And what's more is I think how it happened was a better story. And they Hollywooded the fuck out of it. And it made it bad. And I hated it. I hated my whole experience with it. And so it's kind of like I wasn't really having fun. And then I got to the end of the movie. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck this movie. It's awful. I'm going to go ahead and that's my official stance.
Yeah. If I rewatched it, I'm sure I wouldn't like, I watched it when I was like 16, 17. So I probably at the time thought, oh, wow, this is so cool. But if I rewatched it, then yeah.
I'm not as big. I'm kind of like you, George. Like I like them when I see them, but I don't usually go out of my way for them. There's kind of like a, I feel like there's a really common thing about gangster movies where they're kind of glorified. This kind of like outlaw glorification. There's kind of this aspect to it that follows a lot of these movies around. I feel like Scarface is a really big offender in that one. I love that movie, but I do feel like there's something there where people like, you see all these like rappers and wannabe gangbangers and they're all wearing Scarface shirts. Like they totally miss the point of the movie.
See, I'm going to push back on that a bit only because I love Scarface so much.
Okay. Please. And it's a great movie. I'm not shooting down the movie or anything.
I watched an interesting documentary on Al Pacino the other day. It was talking about how like he didn't even really want to become a movie star. And he was sort of big, you know, he was big doing stage acting. And that's what he loved. And then he got sort of taken to Hollywood by Coppola and he did The Godfather and the rest is history. But anyway, they had interviews with different people. And one of the people who they were interviewing was Stephen Bauer, who was his co-star in Scarface, who played Manny. And I remember Stephen Bauer said in this documentary, he was like, oh, when Scarface was released, you know, everybody hated it. And they said it was just this really violent film and it did lots of cocaine and people shooting guns and everything else. Which it is. I do agree. It is. I mean, I don't know. I like violence in films. So I don't find it gratuitous, but I can see how people could. But I think one of the reasons I love it, and I think in some ways, as much as Training Day is my favorite film, I think Scarface is probably a deeper film in that I've always looked at Scarface not as Cuban guy comes over and starts this drug empire and he, you know, has this massive house and all this coke and all these guns and grenade launchers, blah, blah, blah. Like, yes, that is all true. But I've always seen it as like a comment on so many deeper things. Like it's a comment on immigration and, you know, sort of like the immigration policy of the United States and like the whole thing about when the Mario boat lift and Castro and people coming from Cuba. And it's about like the American dream and what that means, you know, to people coming to America and what, you know, the opportunities that America presents. And it's about like power and the rise to power and like sort of the intoxicating influence of power and how you get a little taste of it and you're not just content with a little taste. You want more and you want more and you want more and you get so deep into it that you lose yourself in this quest for power. And, you know, Tony Montana, you know, is at the top of the world. And that's, you know, he has that classic statue thing, you know, the world is yours. Right? And he's still not content. He still wants more. It's never enough. So I don't know. I think it's just a much deeper film than people give it credit for. I think a lot of people look at it, and I'm not saying this is the way you look at it, but I know there are a lot of people who look at Scarface. And they're just like, oh, it's just fucking gangster drug, shoot him up. And I'm like, on its surface, yes. But if you look, you know, if you look deeper.
See, the thing, I don't think you're pushing back on me because I think we have the same criticism of the same group of people. Because, yeah, it does have the commentaries on those topics. And I think it handles them really well. And it's totally overlooked by all these wannabe hardcore, these losers who like watch the movie and they think it's all about, you know, they romanticize like the candle burning too bright and burning itself out, you know? Yeah, I think you may have actually agreed with me. Sorry, man.
Damn.
yeah, because I agree. There's a lot in there that people don't give it credit for, and they tend to glorify instead the flashy stuff.
Quick question for, wasn't Untouchables De Palma as well, or is that?
Yeah, it is De Palma. You're right. Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he's got a weird filmography. He's made some very like different. Like you know, he's not like some directors who make the same film. Like, he's done a whole bunch of different things. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
No, it's okay. Feel like that is a common theme in gangster movies. People tend to glorify things and miss the point of what these movies are going for. But there are still some that I liked. You know, George mentioned The Town. I have not seen that recently, but I remember very much liking that movie. Was it Leon is kind of a gangster movie. The Professional, it's sort of a gangster movie.
Oh, yes. I love that so much. Yes.
Oh, Leo's in my top 10. Yeah. I would call it, crime drama.
Yeah, kind of a crime drama. Maybe that one doesn't count. I would have said, I kind of wanted to say like the Boondock Saints, but I rewatched that recently and it did not age well, man. It was pretty edgy when it came out. I was in high school or so, I think. But it, I don't recommend it anymore. But like traditional gangster movies, I remember liking Public Enemies, but I would need to rewatch that to give you a really more up to date opinion. I remember enjoying it, but I that was before I really got into movies, so I would need to watch that again with a more critical eye before I can safely say that. But The Departed would be one of my top ones. I'm a big fan of The Departed. Reservoir Dogs.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah,
classic. Yeah, I have not seen that in a while, but I always held that in high esteem ever since I first saw it. Actually, my favorite one, now that I think about it, besides some of the obvious ones, which are actually unironically difficult to dethrone, like The Godfather Part 1 and Part 2 and also Scarface. But if we're not talking about those, probably Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, great film. Yeah,
that's an amazing film.
Is that a British one? There's a lot of great British gangster films.
Have you not seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels?
No,
oh my God, no. George.
No.
That's like your country's biggest import besides Independence Day. Is just that movie.
Yeah, no, I need to. I'm not, as I said, I like Snatch is another good one. Rock and Roller. But I'm not really big into I'm not really big into the British gangster.
Films. You need to watch that one. It is very unique. The way that it has multiple, like a Gordian knot of just intertwining threads of plot that all come together perfectly in this fantastic. I mean, it's just such a clean, complicated, but accessible film. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And then the only other one I can think of off the top of my head that we already haven't already talked about, which is sort of a gangster movie in the periphery. It's not the prime focus, but there's gangsters in it that play a large part, is True Romance.
Tarantino wrote the screenplay, didn't he?
He wrote that, but he didn't direct it, if I remember
Christian
correctly.
Christian Slater.
Yeah, I think he just wrote it and produced it.
Yeah.
I go back and forth on Christian Slater. He's really good in this one. You look up the Sicilian scene on YouTube, and then you're going to immediately go out and buy that movie. I guarantee it. But, I mean, that's all I got. You know, again, this isn't my specialty is gangster movies. I don't really go out. I've seen quite a few, but I don't usually go out of my way for them. But, you know, now that I think about it, I would kind of like to revisit some of these.
Yeah, I think that wraps up episode 11. Well, thanks everyone for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's podcast, we'd love it if you could give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, and we'll see you next week.
Bye bye. Thank you.
See you guys. Bye
bye.